Welcome, everybody, to episode number 57 of the Average Jake Firefighter Podcast. I'm your host, Robbie Owens. Before Leadership, Values, and Introspection was self-published, I had an interesting experience with two large publishing houses. The first publisher was very complimentary toward the book, but eventually rejected it because it's just not what we're looking for. The second publisher wanted to publish the book, but insisted on modifications. They said it's just a little too creative. What? But more importantly, there's not enough science in your book. You need to add some more charts, graphs, and scientific study outcomes. Gary, so much of this information is just your opinion. We went back and forth for 2 months with me repeatedly noting that so many of the books published today are just somebody's opinion. I reminded them that people live through a specific or noteworthy event or period and then write about their observations, thoughts, emotions, and learning. The publisher countered with, "That's true, Gary, but you're not famous." In the end, I both won and lost that battle with the publisher. I lost because they declined to publish my work, and I won because I did it my way. So that's what Leadership, Values, and Introspection is, a book full of observations, thoughts, emotions, and genuine learning, penned by a nobody, presented in non-scientific language, but laser-focused on real-world leadership challenges. That is the introduction and description of the book Leadership, Values, and Introspection by Gary F. Appleby, who retired from the Philadelphia Fire Department after a pretty distinguished and long career of about 40 years. What an amazing, amazing book Leadership, Values is, and we're going to do a book review style podcast today, and we're going to discuss the book Leadership, Values. Before I do that, however, I have to give a huge, huge shout out to Bobby Eckert from Eckert Fire Tactics. I was listening to the weekly scrap through Firehouse Vigilance, and, you know, like I've always talked about, off on a little tangent here, you know, there's something out there for every firefighter, right? Like, and not everything is is your cup of tea. Some people think that this podcast is great, and I appreciate that. And people reach out to me, and they tell me how much they like the podcast. You know, I think that's great, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate anybody who takes the time and the effort to listen to anything that I have to say, because it does take effort. You have to take time out of your day. Anybody, and that's something that I don't take lightly. I don't take lightly, and which is why I don't put out 4 or 5 podcasts a month, right? Because when you press play on this podcast, I want it to be worth your time. I don't want it to be a waste of time. So with that being said, there's something out there for everybody, though. This podcast may not be everybody's cup of tea. There's podcasts out there, Brothers in Battle, Jump Seat Views, 5 Alarm Task Force, Pete Lamb, he's not doing podcasts right now, but his podcast, he's got years and years worth of episodes to go back and listen to. There's so many podcasts out there, Flow and Vent, National Fire Radio, and Firehouse Vigilance, which is brings me back to that point. I had kind of gone back and forth a little bit with some of the Firehouse Vigilance stuff, and even Bobby Eckert. I follow Bobby Eckert on Instagram, and he kind of set me off a little wrong just by based on some of his social media posts. And how short-sighted is that, right? I mean, telling on myself here, if you're judging somebody based on their social media profile, you're probably being a freaking moron, and I was being a freaking moron. So I was a little apprehensive when I sat down to listen to the weekly scrap and Bobby Eckert was the guest. I've enjoyed a lot of the weekly scraps, right? I got to meet Corley Moore when he came to the Fireground Commander Conference, that we host. Super nice guy. And I trust my friend Ben Martin when he says the person's a good guy. So when he said Corley was a good guy, I mean, Corley sat on the front row, sat through every presentation. I mean, he came to the social, like he was involved in the conference, right? And so I started paying more attention to the weekly scrap. I'll be quite honest, I haven't liked all the guests on the weekly scrap, right? Some of them I feel are just building a cult. They want people just to follow them blindly and never question what they do and all that kind of stuff. And I was 100% in that mindset about Bobby Eckert. I'll tell him myself. but I was trying to be open-minded. I was trying to give someone a chance, because how many people have closed their mind off to me? And how many people have listened to a couple episodes of the podcast, of this podcast, and felt like they understood me or read social media posts and have judged me based on that persona? So trying to be a better person, be a little more introspective, as the title of the book states that we're going to go over today. And so I listened to the Weekly Scrap with Bobby Eckert, and I was blown away. I was so blown away and so embarrassed that I had pigeonholed Bobby Eckert as this fire service cultist and extremist, that I felt horrible about myself. And I don't know him, right? I don't know him, never met him. I've only seen his social media profiles, and you know what I mean? Like, we don't know each other. He lives in New Jersey. I live in Virginia. If I've crossed paths with him at a conference, I don't even know that I remember that, right? Like, so, but I felt so bad that I pigeonholed this guy into some cult leader, or some, you know, and I do still believe that there are people out there, right? Like, but I'm trying to reserve that judgment for people that I've actually met. But I had pegged Bobby Eckert in this hole, and immediately after watching the Weekly Scrap, I felt embarrassed that I had put him in that hole. I felt embarrassed that I put him in that category. Is his method of delivery for everyone? No. And neither is mine, neither is everyone's, right? But the message that he's out there spreading around couldn't be more of a positive fireground message, right? Like, he's got a thuggish tint to it, right? Like, he's got a rough around the edges, you know, delivery method. Sure, right? Like, you know, hey man, I get it. Like, you're trying to get people to listen. But if you get past a little bit of that, and you really listen to what he's saying, and you read some of the things he's talking about, and you watch his videos, the guy is all about the right stuff. He's all about the right stuff, and I was being a straight-up idiot for putting him in that category of a fire service cultist. So I reached out to him. I reached out to him, and I sent him a message, and we conversed over social media, and I fell on this. I told him, I was like, hey man, I was dead wrong about you. I don't know you. I said, but I apologize for putting you in that realm, in that mindset, or in that category of guys that are just out there trying to create a cult for themselves and go on the speaking circuit and get rich. That ain't him. I can assure you that that's not him. And I'm hoping that we actually get to sit down and have a face-to-face conversation one day, so that I can formally meet him. And he was super genuine and respectful when he DM'd me back. So, I mean, just so shout out to Bobby Eckert. And on the scrap, he recommended this book, Leadership Values. And man, I owe him a lot. This book really spoke to me. And I read a lot. Like, if you follow me on social media, Instagram or anything like that, you know I read a lot. Like, especially, like, I ask for, usually for Christmas, I ask for a ton of books. I load up with books over the holidays, and I like it when people give me books as gifts, and I like to give books as gifts. When my buddy Daniel Myers got promoted to lieutenant, I gave him a copy of About Face, because I feel like it's one of the best leadership books that's out there. I've gifted him several people books. The Crossfire Method of Conflict Management. I've given that to several lieutenants in our fire department, especially when they seem like they may be struggling with conflict, right? That's, you know, I give them books that have helped me. And I did a review on Crossfire Conflict Management in one of the earlier episodes of the podcast, if you want to go back and listen to that. But man, this book is absolute gold. I don't know why this isn't required reading for every company officer that ever sits down and anybody that you, if you think that you want to be a company officer, whatever that is in your fire department, a lieutenant, a captain, I mean, whatever that is, whatever your first line supervisor is, a sergeant, you need to get this book, Leadership Values. You need to get it, and you need to read it, and you need to digest it. I mean, it is an easy, real fire service leadership book. It is not one of these leadership books where they're giving you, if you do this, then this is the outcome that'll happen. Because we know that that's not true. We know that that's not true. We know that even if, some of our best efforts, we're not going to reach everybody. We're not going to reach everybody, but this book shows the values that you need to constantly maintain as a leader, whether you're reaching your audience or not. It's about values. And a lot of times, if you have good values, people are going to follow you. And man, what a tremendous, tremendous book. I can't say enough about it. I mean, I highlighted so many pages. I mean, I ran out of pen ink when I was reading this book. And so we're going to cover some of the highlights, some of the things that really, really spoke to me in this book. But I want you to go out and get it. It's about $15 on Amazon, I think I paid for it. And it is worth $100. This is at one of the top levels of any leadership book I've ever read. It has skyrocketed into my... Like, if we went back, if you know, like, I went and did a top 10 books that every officer should read episode of the podcast with Brandon Douglas. And... if we went back and redid that, this would shoot up to my number one. This would shoot up to one of my number ones. Probably, definitely in my top two or three. About Face being Extreme Ownership being there, and this is right. This is that caliber of book, and it just really, really spoke to me. So let's kind of get into it a little bit. Let's get into the book, and we'll go right to what leadership values. What he's talking about, and when Gary Appleby, Chief Appleby, talks about the leadership values that he's talking about, there are 14 values that he feels are the absolute critical values that a company that a leader needs to master and always be on point. And they are integrity, vision, decisiveness, self-discipline, accountability, optimism, courage, honesty, trustworthiness, pride, compassion, loyalty, humility, and enlightenment. And that right there sets a pretty good stage for what the book is all about. And so the way the book is structured, he talks about He takes one of those values. Each value is its own chapter, and he talks about what that value means, the definition of it, what it means to uphold that value, what it looks like real life when you're living a life of integrity, or you have leadership vision, or you're being decisive, and all of those things. And then he gives a story, and it is a story that is rooted in the fire service, because that's who Gary Appleby is. He is a firefighter. He is a fire chief in a busy urban fire department. So he gives you a story that has correlations to leadership no matter what you're doing, but it is rooted in the fire service. And that is probably what really hooked me, was I agreed a ton with a lot of his values and his statements about values and all of those things. But man, those stories, those real true life stories where he highlights his successes and his failures, really, really grabbed me. It really, really grabbed me. And it, because it's real to me. Not that you can't be a Fortune 500 CEO and get something out of this. You totally can if you listen to it. But firefighters, leaders in the fire service, we know that our job is different. We know that we lead people differently. One, because we lead people into, you know, dangerous situations. We lead people, through some of their worst times. Right, some of their worst times. I've had people going through divorces, as we call it, domestic realignment, in my firehouses, people that have had children pass, parents pass, you know, and then we expect them to not only, you know, come to work and perform, we expect them to go help someone else in that situation. Right, and it just becomes tough, and it's a different leader. We eat with the people that we lead. We sleep in the same place with them, right? Like, you know, a lot of firehouses still have shared bunk rooms, you know, so you're sleeping 6 feet, 10 feet away from a guy that maybe you yelled at on a fire, right? Because he did something wrong. And then you have to mend that relationship, and you have to be able to lead them the next shift, and you have to be able to deal with, you know, and you don't know what they're dealing with at home, or you should know what they're dealing with at home, and you have to help them get through that and absorb that and still go out and try to save people's lives. And it just, it's different. And it's something that people, these people who wax poetic about leadership and they wax poetic about, you know, the, you know, management, you know, these human resource types don't get what we do. And they always try to apply these simple solutions to our leadership problems and our challenges, and they just don't fit. They just don't fit. It's unique. What we do is unique. And so this book will really give you some methods and some ideas on how to deal with it, and or at least how to carry yourself so that you're always moving forward with positive values. And it really, I mean, I can't speak enough about it. One of the things that he talks about, and this is right in the introduction of the book, is many leaders do not make the right choices simply because they have the wrong values. Values and choices are strongly and irrevocably linked together. For most of us, the two are a package deal. I mean, that is right. I mean, you know, we talk about values and we talk about choices, and he's exactly right. Like, what, like a lot of what is going on in the world today with this dissension is all about values and choices, right? Like, if someone brushes up against what you value or tries to you know, take away your choices or tries to influence your choices in a way that violates your values, man, like, we're not going to follow that guy, right? I mean, that's, you know, and that happens on both sides. I'm not saying, you know, like, picking one side or the other. That happens on both sides. Like, you know, whatever you believe in politically, whatever you believe in religiously, whatever you believe in, you know, whatever, like your family unit, whatever your value system is, if someone brushes up against that and starts to push and challenge your values, man, you're not going to follow that person. You're just not. And you're probably not going to get along with that person, right? So it just, it's all about those two things. At least, you know, for me it is, and I know for a lot of people. So, back to the book here. I once had a professor who said, human beings are meaning-making machines who go through every day making judgment after judgment, sometimes very rapidly and with little or no thought. He pointed out that we are all hardwired that way, and it's very difficult for us to reduce these endless, lightning-quick daily judgments. He advised that we are in constant judgmental state. That's good, that's bad, he's a nitwit, she's pretty cool. We all create our own personal value system of what is important to us. We even create individual layers of importance. In our minds, other people adhering to our value system becomes our personal rules of the game. And when someone breaks one of our important personal rules of the game, even if we do not overly react, an alarm goes off because we notice all violators of our personal value system. And most times, we do not like it. And that's extremely true, at least for me. I know, you know, and I'm going to talk a lot about more fire service values than I am, like, you know, political and you know, all those things, because those can be very polarizing, and I'm not afraid to talk about those things, but we're talking about leadership in the fire service, right? And so, like, I know, for example, when, and I've done this as a firefighter, as a leader, when someone says something on the fire ground that pushes up against my belief system and my values, you know, I automatically, whether I, like, confront them right away, or whether I, you know, say something to them right away, or maybe I never do it at all, it automatically sets that alarm off. It automatically makes me think that they're less than a lot of the time, right? I don't like to throw the word coward around. I don't think that we should be throwing the word coward around. You know, coward, one, people have a lot of definitions of that, and I don't truly believe that anybody raised their right hand and to do this job is a coward, because it takes so much sacrifice. It takes so much discipline. It takes so much, you know, it takes years away from your life, to be quite honest with you. And so just raising your right hand, and saying you're going to do this job. I don't like that word coward, but I do think that that maybe sometimes makes you less of a fireman, right? When you brush up against my value system, you know, when you say that maybe you don't believe in VES, right? Like that brushes up against my value system. When you believe that the only proper way to do the fire ground is to have a writ in place, like that pushes up against my value system. Right? Like that pushes up. So I automatically make a note about you that like, all right, this guy's not what he's not as much of a fireman. Right. And that's tough. That's tough, man. We're constantly like that. So if you're going to lead people, one, you have to be open to that scrutiny, but two, you have got to make sure that your value system is steadfast and that you have a solid foundation of values, and like these values that he talks about will give you that solid foundation, and these values that, and it also, it highlights some of the leadership traps, right? Like when you violate my trust, like my trust is an extremely high value to me, and when you violate that, you're probably never getting it back. I can tell, like, and there are people that, you know, I know people that from my fire department listen to this podcast, and they know that some of those guys have violated my trust. Like I've gone through disciplinary action where I've been treated appropriately, and I've gone through a disciplinary action where I don't think I was treated appropriately. And those people know that I no longer trust them, and I will never trust them again. Thankfully, some of them are retired. But I can tell you that I have gone through these processes where like I no longer trust and will never, ever, ever trust some of these people again. Not to the point where we have violence, right? But to the point where, like, I would never believe anything that they said. Even, like, they could probably come to me and tell me a tornado was coming, and I could see the tornado, and I would still doubt their trustworthiness. Like, that's how bad they violated that trust. And so it's difficult of a leader if you're constantly brushing up against these people's value systems and don't have a concrete set of values yourself. And to be honest with you, it's hard if you don't share those. You can't expect a level of values and a level of performance that you don't share. So I really think it's something that we don't do in the fire service, right? In fact, it's probably never happened to me up until recently where we sat down as a group and decided like, hey, we're going to air our dirty laundry. And if people are talking shit, let's get it out now so that we can move forward. And then we're gonna decide today how we're going to treat each other. And we're going to decide today how we're going to speak to each other. Man, that had never happened to me in my, 18 years with the current department that I've been with, and, you know, been volunteering since I was 15, I'm 40, you know, so like in that entire time, that's never happened. In fact, like, especially in the volunteer days, it was most of the time a knockdown, drag out argument. And sometimes it even led to a fight, right? Like a physical fight where you would, but then you'd get over it, right? Like, but man, like some of those were hairy, hairy times. So, I mean, that's kind of sets the stage for the book. And the very first chapter, which to me is one of the most important values, is integrity. If you don't have integrity, you really don't have anything. And so that's chapter one, page number one, back to the book. If you're not willing to do the right thing consistently, not many of your other admirable values will even matter. In the simplest of terms, integrity is moral soundness. At its foundation, it is a strong sense of what human behavior is right and, equally important, what is wrong. By soundness, I mean that one's level of integrity is free of deficits and cannot be easily shaken. True values do not change direction with every new breeze, no matter how strong that breeze may be. Integrity is about doing what is right, no matter what. You can't be experiencing a rough shift every other week in which your integrity level drops off to meet the dilemmas. Personal integrity should have no ebb and flow. It's not something you alter based on a particular situation or challenge. And that is extremely powerful, right? Like that speaks to me in a very, very powerful way. And it also, though, you know, and later in the book, Gary talks about, you know, some humility with that. But man, like, absolute 100% integrity, number one, important in having values. If you're not having integrity, then you're not leading. It just is true, right? It's just a fact. It's true that if you don't have integrity, no one's going to follow you, and you can't lead anyone. And man, I've struggled with it too, guys, right? Like, I'm not perfect. I have let my integrity or my standard, which is what I kind of hear when he's talking about integrity, and what really speaks to me is, like, have I let my integrity slip when I'm having a bad day? And I have. I totally have. Or when I'm pissed off, you know, after I went through a disciplinary issue and they moved me out of a firehouse that I wanted to be at, they moved me to a firehouse I didn't want to be at, probably for about 2 weeks, I disconnected. I let my integrity or my standard lax, right? Like, I wasn't going out there training every day. Like, and that was hard because I wanted to do those things, right? Like, but I was so mad. I was like, nope, you're not getting the best of me anymore. You know, you scorned me, right? And that wasn't it, right? Like, I eventually, thank God I came around, you know, like most of the times in my life, someone smarter than me pointed out that I wasn't holding the standard that I had upheld for so long. And so I came around to it, but man, like, it hurt me. It hurt me with a lot of people. It hurt my leadership credibility. It hurt, you know, a lot of those things moving forward. And I've had to rebuild that, right? Like, I've had to rebuild that relationship, and I've had to rebuild those things. So, I mean, not an easy task by any stretch of the imagination, right? Not an easy task at all. But, you know, we've all let that slip. We've all let that integrity or that standard slip. And it just, it damages you every time you let it do. Every time you don't hold the line. Every time. And it doesn't have to be this ironclad thing. Like, I'm going to train every day and that's what I believe in. I do believe in that. But remember, guys and gals, it doesn't always have to be this World War II type drill where we go to the burn building and we light 6 fires or smoke barrels. It can be that, all right, today's drill is going to be we review an SOG, or today's drill is going to be we just stretch the line, you know, stretch the high rise pack. And we can do it in our, we can go through like what I would call like a, what an NFL team would call a walkthrough, right? Like, okay, we're going to simulate a fire in a high rise. Like, here's our standpipe. Let's walk through. Let's go through the motions. And everybody talks about what their job is and what they're looking for when they're doing their job. And that, then we do it a little more full speed. And then we do it full speed the next time, right? Like, that can be the drill, okay? And that's how you can, you know, and that, so when you're having that integrity talk and when you're having that standard, make sure that, you know, you're keeping it up. When you have integrity, back to the book, when you have integrity, you care more about doing the right thing than doing things right. You care more about sticking to your values than looking good. I have known newly promoted leaders who assumed it would be easy to maintain their integrity in their new roles. They must have truly believed that there's a shortage of situations and people out there who are just waiting to challenge or test their leadership ability. When asked, I usually caution them that some of their greatest challenges may come from people who they thought were their genuine friends. And that has 1,000% happened to me. This wasn't a person who I thought was my genuine friend, but I've had a guy who, when I was recently promoted, would tell me he knew where he was going when we would catch a call and he was driving me on the engine. Would tell me he knew where he was going and go the wrong way on purpose to see if I could recover from it. He was testing me. That was his way of testing me. He would see if I would catch his mistakes, and he was testing me to see if I'd call him out on his mistakes. When he would say, oh yeah, I know where I'm going, and he would take off and he'd start to go make her, I'd be like, nope, you need to go this way, such and such, such and such here. And he, are you sure? He'd always go, are you sure? And look at me. And I'd be like, yep, I'm sure. I've got it right here on the map book. Hydrant's on the corner, yada, yada, yada. And this went on for probably a good 2 or 3 months, right? Whenever that guy was driving me, even on the ambulance, he would do that to me. Until I proved to him that I wasn't going to waver. I was going to call him on his mistake. I was going to call him out. I was not going to let him, you know, mess up and me just sweep it under the rug. And so then he changed. But I mean, that is, and that's just one example of the many times that my leadership has been challenged, right? My values, my integrity has been challenged. Another thing about integrity, back to the book, sometimes the biggest impediment to achieving our full leadership potential is the company that we keep. The reality is that we are judged, at least to some degree, by the company we keep. People do notice who the boss hangs out with. You know, and that can be difficult, right? Because I can tell you, and it's something that is difficult for me. It's difficult for me to this day. Even though I am in a leadership position and I often ride up to a higher level of leadership, I still like being one of the boys in the firehouse. I still like cracking jokes. I don't play pranks anymore. Like that is one of those things I've had to change. But man, I still like cracking jokes, and I still probably like having an inappropriate conversation. But people notice. People have noticed that about me. People have said that about me. People have said that I need to be more professional. People have said that I need to toe the company line more. But some of those things do push up against my value. They push up against my integrity. They push up against me. You know, I refuse to be fake. Now, do I need to be better? Absolutely. I can't not be who I really am. And I refuse to be fake when I'm at work. But, you know, people do notice, man. Like, people notice when you go to the same firehouse over and over again, right? Like, man, he must love those guys. He's hanging out there all the time. And they make judgments on that. They make judgments. They make little snide comments about people being your favorite, right? Like, that's what happens. People notice where you go. You're the boss. You're the leader. You're under a microscope. So your integrity is also always under a microscope. Back to the book. Let me give you the bad news in attempting to be a leader with integrity. Integrity comes with a price tag. Sooner or later, as a leader, you have to pay up, and it works in an odd way. In most organizations, the more you care, the sooner you are likely to have to pay the price. The price tag of trying to be a person, or especially a leader of integrity, can be very high. It's a high price because often there are confrontations, sleepless nights, migraine headaches, knots in your stomach, rumors, half-truths, lies told about you, the loss of artificial friends, days in which you may wake up and wish you never took the promotion in the first place. But your integrity is so important as a leader, and it's definitely worth fighting for. For on the leadership scale, there is no higher value than consistently doing the right thing. And man, I have experienced every stinking one of those things, right? I have had sleepless nights. I have had confrontations. I've lost friends. I have lost friends in the fire department because of the way that I now carry myself, that I have changed, right? I'm not the same as I was when I was 22 and I got hired, but I have lost friends. I have lost people who I thought were my friends, or I thought that I could trust, that I now know that I can't trust, right? And so I've had all of those. I have had many moments, especially from going from lieutenant to captain, where I wish that I could just give it all back, hand it all back in, go back to riding the back seat, not even drive, like no responsibility, want to go back to riding backwards, my only job being to get masked up fast and pull a line and put fires out. So much so that, like, my wife and I have talked about it in detail. Like, if, not to get too much into our personal life, but, like, she just had a relative die that is leaving her some money. And she even told me, if the money is X amount, you can quit if you want to. I mean, that level of conversation that we've had. So, I've been there, but I still keep coming back to it. And I've talked about this in other podcasts as well. I still keep coming back to it. I have tried to find other things in the fire outside the fire service that I want to do, and I just keep getting drawn back, man. And that's a good sign, because you know it's really where you're supposed to be. Like, if you could easily leave the fire service, and I've seen a ton of people do it. We've got people leaving the fire service left and right in our fire department, right? Like, man, people are going to do IT. They're just going away. I mean, I know a guy that left us to go work for a different business, got the itch to be a firefighter again, got hired with a neighboring fire department, and has already left there. Guy's not a firefighter, okay? He's not a fireman, right? Undoubtedly, I can't quit the fire service wholeheartedly, right? Like, I will always do something in the fire service, right? Like, I'm even looking at, like, you know, I've probably got 11 more years to where I'm going to retire from the department that I'm in now. And I will always read about the fire service. I mean, if the rehab flying squad is still in operation when I retire, I'll probably join that. Or, man, you know, we're starting to hire our retirees to do our air utility, like pull one 24-hour shift a week on the air utility. You go to every work and fire, you fix SCBAs, you know, live in a firehouse one day a week. Man, I could see myself doing that as in retirement, just to still be involved in the fire service. I can't quit it, right? And so, but that's a good thing, because I know that's where I'm supposed to be. I know it's where I'm supposed to be. If I left my current department, I would go work for another fire department. I wholeheartedly believe that. I would take a hiatus, but I'll never walk away from the fire service. This is who I am, right? And so that's where you need to be, right? Like, that's how you know that you're in the right place. So, you know, don't fear that integrity. Don't fear those things. Like, you know, live up to it. It's difficult. It sucks sometimes. It sucks having to be the bad guy, right? But, man, it's worth it. And it's worth it when it really counts, where the people trust you and they know they can trust you. They know they can come talk to you. They know that when they come to you when you can help them, right? And they look to you to help them. And that's when it's really worth it. On the fire ground or in the firehouse, like, that's when they know. That's when you know you're really making some hay. And you're not going to reach everybody, man. Like, you could poll the 600 people that work in the fire department that I work for, and half of them would probably tell you that I'm a dickhead, okay? And that's okay, right? 600 people, if only 300 people think you're a dickhead, I think that I'm doing pretty good, you know? but man, like, you just got to keep that integrity, right? You got to do the right thing all the time, no matter what. And if you have those lapses in integrity, one lapse in integrity is probably worth 10 leadership steps backwards. It really is. So you're going to have to work even harder to rebuild those relationships. Moving on to chapter 3, just a few quick things back to the book. Chapter 3 starts on page 43, and it's entitled Decisiveness. As a leader, if you can't pull the trigger on a big decision and be resolute about your decision, your strong integrity and inspiring vision for the future simply won't be relevant. If you cannot make timely and effective leadership decisions, the truth is that your organizational presence won't matter much. Inaction can be as damaging to leadership as inept action. And this is just another way of saying, like, you know, decisions are important, right? You need to be decisive. You need to be decisive. You need to pull the trigger, man. You've got to make a decision. One of the ways people say it is a bad decision is better than no decision. And I think that's true, right? Like, but you get these leaders that are just paralyzed with indecisiveness, and they can't make, and it happens to everyone, right? Again, I'm, you know, I'll bare my soul, you know, a little bit. It happens to where you get a little bit of analysis paralysis, right? Like, you want more information and want more information and want, because you're scared to make a bad decision, right? Like, how many people do you know that are judged because they make a poor decision, right? It happens all the time. We do a really good job in the fire service of what I call eating our young, right? We wait for that guy to screw up. And when he does, man, we pounce on him, right? We eat our young. We kill him. We kill him at the coffee table. We kill him at the kitchen table, right, over coffee. We kill him, man. We talk so much. I mean, it happened the other day in the firehouse, right? Like, it was like, man, why'd this guy do that on this fire? What a dumbass, blah, blah. You know what I mean? It happens, dude. Even your friends will talk shit about you, right, if you do this stuff, if you make a bad choice on the fire ground or make a bad choice, period. So I get it. It happens to all of us, but you got to pull the trigger. You've got to make sure you're being decisive. Gary talks about, he highlights just like a way to do that. And I really, really, really like it. And it talks about Colin Powell and, you know, how much information do you really need to make a decision? Back to the book. I'll acknowledge that many of these opportunities that leaders mull over do involve some risk. But remember, if you're the leader, it's really difficult to steal second base when your foot is firmly planted on first base. Hope this is not a newsflash for you, but managing risk and tolerating anxiety and stress are fundamental and inescapable parts of leadership. Under the right conditions, a leader's just do it and contemplate later attitude definitely has merit. So much has been written and discussed about the benefits of organizations being agile by having a bias for action. Tom Peters and Robert Waterman, authors of In Search of Excellence, popularized the term in describing how important it is for successful organizations to stay spry, nimble, alert, and ready to act without the customary analysis or sufficient information. I think that that retired U.S. Army General Colin Powell offers even more meaty advice for us in his leadership primer with his formula of P equals 40 minus 70. In this formula, P stands for probability of success, and the numbers indicate the percentage of information needed. What this means is that we shouldn't act if we have only enough information to give us less than 40% chance of being successful. Less than 40% is shooting from the hip and will cause you to make too many mistakes. But we shouldn't wait until we have enough facts to be 100% sure, because by then it will almost always be too late. And that is, I mean, how true is that, right? Like, how many times, and especially, how many times do we wait too long, right? Like, we choose to wait so long before we make a good decision, right? And we got to have all the information, and I got to see it from all different sides, you know? I mean, and it's even something that, like, a lot of, like, fire chiefs are preaching, right? And like, they have to look at it from every angle and every corner and every part of analysis, and got to have all, and a lot of times, man, then it's too late, right? You've missed your window, you've missed your opportunity, or more importantly, you're missing your audience. Line-level firefighters, blue-collar line-level firefighters, see problems, we want to fix them. That's what we do. And so if we feed you a problem and we give you a solution and you take forever to implement it, you're losing your audience. We're gonna think you're not decisive. We're going to think that you can't make the big call. It happens all the time, man. It has happened so many times in my fire department. I'm not gonna get into all the details of it, but I can. We're living some of those things right now when it comes to certain things that should have been fixed years ago. Documents that should have been reviewed that are sitting on desks, right? Like that's not. Like, you lose your audience and you lose the ability to lead people because they just don't think, they can't trust your decisions. They don't think you're decisive. It happens. It's happened to me. It happens to every leader, right? But the important thing is to try to minimize it. And man, that 40-70 rule is a really, really good method, right? Like, don't, you know, if you only got 40% of the information, don't act, right? You don't have enough. You're going to make mistakes, but you can't wait for 100 either, because you're going to miss the audience. You're going to miss your opportunity, you know? So, and they say around 70%, after 70%, trust your gut. If you've got 70% of the information, trust your gut. Trust your gut. If you've got 70% of the information and you don't think it's going to work, it ain't going to work. We're not doing it. Or you've got 70% of the information and you think it's going to, and you think it's going to work, then man, boom. And I'll be honest, like, that's fireground decision-making, right? That is fireground or combat decision-making. You can never get 100% of the information. At best, on our best day on the fireground, we're starting with 50, right? Maybe 50. That's probably, like, best-case scenario. And we gather more information through doing proper size-up and knowing building construction and doing a walk-around and all of those things. But we ain't at 100. We ain't at 100. We're never at 100. We make constant decisions in the 70% range. And I think that's something important for leaders too. Like, you know, again, we don't have to be rash on everything, right? We don't have to be rash in every decision. But golly, man, like, when you've got a bunch of guys that are built to make decisions, and we encourage it. We encourage it. And when you encourage that level of high-risk decision-making with not all the information, how, when you're not in a risk in a high-risk situation, can you justify not making decisions? How can you do it? It just doesn't make a lot of sense. And I think that's where some of the humility stuff comes in that we'll talk about later. Like, it's okay to make the wrong decision, especially if you own it. If you were wrong, just say you're wrong. And let's try to move forward instead of trying to hide it and say that it was this reason that it wasn't successful. You know, don't try to justify. We can, and he talks about it in the book. We're not going to read that chapter, but we can literally, humans are wired to rationalize anything. We can make anything sound good. A lot of times we use it with small tasks, right? Like, well, I can't go to the gym today because of X, right? Like, and you'll make yourself feel good about that, right? Oh, I can't read that book today, or I can't do that, I can't do this. You know, we can make anything sound great to ourselves, right? So don't do that. Don't do that. Show the humility. Don't try to rationalize your bad decisions. Just own them. Move forward. One of the other ways that he talked about, and this is something that I got from General Mattis, and we're still in the decisiveness stuff. If you read Call Sign Chaos by General Mattis, one of the things he helped his decision-making process was he studied old battles, right? And so one of this thing here, it says, study case histories and the lessons learned from past events. I even wrote in the margin, General Mattis. General Mattis talks about when he would go to fight wars in the Middle East or whatever. Like, that's like all historical stuff, right? Like the Persians and all these things, they fought wars in these same places. So he read about them. He read about them. He read about the same parts of the Middle East that they were going to wage war in. He would read stuff out of the Bible, right? Like, that's the case history of that area of the world that they were doing battle in. Well, man, we've got case history after case history after case history in the fire service, right? Even with decision making. Go to the NFA has thousands of papers from EFO projects. I guarantee one of those people have tackled what you're trying to do. Go look it up. Go look in the library. Go look in the library and freaking read about these things. You know, study the past so that we can predict the future. Study the past so that we can predict the future. Right? I mean, like, any of that stuff. If you knew in an hour you were going to go to a building collapse, you'd probably pull out Vincent Dunn's book and read about building collapse. Or you'd pull out Brannigan's book and read about building construction. You'd spend that next hour reading about it so that you were as prepared as you can be. Man, we've got a ton of that type of resources out there. Like, why? Like, but we don't seem to utilize them. And it's a global thing, right? I'm not talking about any specific person or fire department. I'm talking about just period, right? We don't do it in our personal lives. And like, we think we're so smart. And instead of like, we don't ask our parents, we don't ask our, like, hey, you know, when you lived through this, what happened, right? Like, and especially in the time that we're in now, where we're on the brink of declaring war on Russia, well, like, we should probably be looking at what happened in the past when this went on, right? We should be looking at the late 80s and early 90s where Russia fell and all of these, like, we should be looking at, like, you know, battle histories and, you know, strategies and all of those things in order to know how to proceed through this. And so, you know, and this is a high stakes, high risk decision. So, but we still can't wait for all the 100% information, right? But a lot of it's there. The information's there. Just go read it. So, you know, again, so make decisions. It'll 100% give you some more leadership credibility, right? It'll 100% make, you know, stand your values. Chapter 5, back to the book, accountability. Starts on page 69 in the book if you're following along. Accountability. Accountability is your sense of personal responsibility. A problem some organizations occasionally have with its newest leaders is that, unfortunately, some of them want the money, the benefits, the prestige, and the glory, but they won't accept their personal accountability. Why is it that so many of the so-called leaders who complain the loudest about the way the ball bounces are frequently the ones who dropped it in the first place? And I know we all know people like that. We all know people like that. We all know people that took the promotion or stepped into a formal leadership role only for the prestige, their personal prestige or the money or the paycheck. I mean, I went to a statewide chief officer academy, and one of the people in the class talked about, like, yep, that's what it's all about, right? Getting that promotion so you get that raise and take care of your family better. And that's not 100% false, but that should not even be in your top 10 of reasons why you want to get a promotion and become a leader, right? Because I can tell you that all that it ain't, if that's your reason, it ain't worth it. Go do something else. Get a part-time job. Because yep, you're going to make more money, but you're also going to have more accountability. You're also going to have more responsibility. You're going to be involved in people's lives, other people's lives, to a level that, man, is ridiculous, okay? And that's going to bring all those things we talked about before, the stress, the confrontations, all those things. I can tell you, no amount of money in the world is worth that. You have to want to do this stuff. You have to want to sit down and be a leader. Paul Hashhagen talked about how the city of New York paid him to clean the rigs and the firehouse and all that stuff, and he risked his life for free because there's no amount of money anybody could put on his life. He did that part for free. And I kind of have to agree, right? Like, my compensation is to do all that other stuff. I do all the firefighting stuff for free. Like, I enjoy it. I did it for free for many years. You know, I enjoy all that stuff, but the compensation is really, is the leadership part, is the other stuff that they pay me to do paperwork and they pay me to do that stuff. But they don't pay me to care about people either, right? Like, that leadership, that innate leadership stuff, they don't pay me for that, right? Because there's no amount of money that you can put on that, right? Like, there's no amount of money that you can offer me that's going to make me care about this person. There's no amount of money you can offer me that's going to make me answer the phone at 1 a.m. when the guy calls, right? Like, and he needs help and he's in trouble. I do that for free, right? Like, I do that for free. I do that because I think it's expected. You know, so you're paying me for the stuff I don't want to do or that I don't feel it, you know. So that right there, if it's all about the money and it's all about the, you know, then just go do something else, man. You can make a whole lot more money doing something else. You could probably make a more lucrative living doing something part-time and working for your benefits for the fire department like a lot of guys do. I would encourage you to just go seek other employment, but man, get a part-time job before you take promotion if that's the only reason you do it. Don't forget you're being compensated to perform at a higher leadership level. Again, I tend to agree with that. You know, you are being compensated, but again, like we just talked about, like, there's a lot of these things that you can't offer me enough money to do. And so you have to have that innate, like, I'm doing this because it's the right thing, that integrity piece that we already talked about. And a leader with no accountability is no leader at all. And that's 100% true. And, man, he talks about this story called "The Captain Was a Con Man," and I'm not going to read the whole story, but essentially the gist of it is he's a newly promoted battalion, and he has this captain that did something wrong, and the captain took several seconds, and I'll read a little bit of it from it back to the book. The captain took several seconds to gather his thoughts and then replied, "Chief, you're absolutely correct. It was totally my fault. I just got lazy. I know better, and I accept full responsibility. I truly do understand the department's policy and the safety implications, and I do realize the critical need for me to have an adequate water supply. I apologize to you, and I promise there will be no repeat behavior." So, goes on, you know, he accepts that answer. It's like, all right, this guy's demonstrating ownership. This captain starts to work for Chief Appleby on a permanent basis, and they're coming to station inspections, and there's a list of stuff that he has to do, and the station captain didn't do any of them, right? Like, you know, and so he pulls him aside and says, and back to the book, "Captain, what are you doing here? You haven't shown me one thing that meets the department's standards. What do you have to say for yourself?" And the captain looked at him and said, "Chief, you're absolutely correct. It was totally my fault. I just got lazy. I know better, and I accept full responsibility. I truly do understand the department's policy on station and member readiness and cleanliness. I apologize to you, and I promise there will be no repeat behavior." The guy was a con artist. The guy was a con man. He's just feeding bullcrap, right? He's just feeding bullcrap. He had no accountability for his actions. He just kept and he probably fed that line to everybody who ever came down on him ever in the fire service, right? Like, he had no accountability. He had no standard of accountability. He had no standard of excellence, right? We all know that guy. You're sitting here, you close your eyes and you're picturing somebody. And that's it, and that method works, right? Like that's like the detailed stuff. Like that's like right out of Jocko's Extreme Ownership, right? That almost that entire speech is like word for word, like what Jocko would tell you if someone came down on you. Right? Like if someone said, you know, what do you have to say for yourself? You're like, you own it. But it's gotta be genuine. It's gotta be genuine. You actually truly have to be accountable and you have to show growth. You can only get away with that statement without showing growth so many times. And so, like you said, we got to have accountability as leaders. We are accountable for our actions. We're accountable for our decisions. We're accountable for what we do. And if you don't own it and you don't change, truly change, then you're not really leading anything at all. You're not going to be a leader. You're not going to be a well-respected leader. Continuing on with the book, going on to chapter 7, Courage. And, you know, initially when I read this book, I started to read this chapter, I thought he was kind of talking about something different. And man, he really kind of spun it on me. And that's why I think it's important to talk about, you know, he talks about, in my experience, back to the book here, starts on page 93, chapter 7. My experience, courage is that quality of the mind that enables one to meet danger and difficulties head on with spirit, firmness, resolution, and tenacity. So that's like, that's kind of what I think about courage as well, right? Like courage is like, you know, that you put aside your fear and you just go, right? Like you go after it, right? Like, however, he really grabs me with this one, and back to the book. Our best leaders display an all-encompassing type of courage that has them standing tall all the time, not just during formally declared emergencies. Exemplary leaders show courage routinely in the office, the boardroom, the courtroom, the laboratory, the warehouse, staff meetings, social settings, and everywhere else that leadership is expected. Sometimes leaders need courage for even the simplest of acts. For example, uttering those sometimes painful or embarrassing words, "I don't know." Some are so scared that they simply don't do it. When you're a leader, admitting that you don't know something can be an agonizing moment. After all, you're the leader. Most people think that you're supposed to know. Sometimes a leader's honest acknowledgement of "I don't know" can be the most courageous thing you'll do all month. Of course, the obligation then is that you will find out the correct answer and take the required action. Credible leaders are never afraid to say, "I don't know." Here's another courageous leadership phrase that you may never have heard from a particular boss or personally uttered. "I'm sorry. I apologize." Some leaders act like their promotion and their newly acquired additional responsibility and accompanying pressure excuses them from such pedestrian acts. Some people even believe that apologizing is a sign of weakness. I mean, that really grabbed me. Because we talk about like the courage to go inside and like, you know, the courage to you know, be brave in an emergency and all of this stuff. And man, that's all important, right? Like you do have to set aside, you do need a certain level of courage, right, to do what we do, right? To go into a burning building. But man, why does it always seem that the courage to do those things is, man, a whole lot easier to render up than it is sometimes to admit that you're wrong or to say sorry. I mean, like, even in your own personal life, like, when you mess up, man, like, one of the hardest things I've had to do is have the courage to go to my oldest son and said that I did something wrong, right? Like, I did something wrong. Like, I did not treat him the way that I want him to be treated, and I made him do something that I knew he didn't want to do, and I made him do it anyway. I felt like the worst father ever. And I stood outside of his door for a good, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes before I had the courage to go in there and speak to him. And man, like, that was one of the most difficult conversations that I've ever had. But you know what? It really turned a corner for us. And this was years ago. This is probably 7, 8, 9 years ago. It really turned a corner in our relationship, right? And like, he knows that I have his best interest at heart, and he knows that if I screw up, I'm going to apologize, and he knows that he can do the same. It has given him the courage to admit his mistakes, right? It's given him the courage to come to me. It's given him the courage to come to me and say things that when he doesn't agree with me. And that's a great thing. And that, I'm not saying it's all sunshine and rainbows over here, right? We still get in arguments. We still fight. But man, like just that simple. And that was, I'm telling you, that was extremely hard. Extremely hard. And I can, and that, I didn't realize that that was courage until I read Chief Appleby's book. And he's 100% right. How many times have you lacked the courage to confront a coworker you knew was doing wrong? How many? And I've had it. I've had it. Like I'm talking about, you know, I'm talking just as much to the audience as I am to myself, right? How many times have you lacked the courage to do the right thing? How many times have you lacked the courage to say you don't know? How many times have you lacked the courage to say you're sorry? I had a firefighter who I was ready to discipline through the roof. I mean, like going after this guy's job when he had the courage to come to me and tell me what was really going on and why his performance was suffering. And then I had to muster the courage to go to my boss and my boss's boss and tell them, leave this guy alone. We've got him. He's under control. We're working with him. He's going to get better. It's going to take time. But we don't need to have these conversations anymore. Man, they could have slapped me across the face, right? Like, they could have disciplined me, and that took courage, and I was willing to risk it because I knew it was the right thing to do. But man, I was scared, right? Like, you know, you're going to go talk to your boss and your boss's boss, you know, like, I'm talking like, at this point, that's three levels above me, like, and you're just a lowly, single plunger on your collar, going and telling, you know, a guy that's got three or four on his collar that, hey, you've got this, leave it alone. Don't come messing with this guy no more. Man, that takes a lot of courage. And I didn't know that was courage then, right? Like, you know, I just thought it was doing the right thing, and I'm not trying to brag on myself, please, but it just, when I hear that and I read that story, that's what really spoke to me. And I'm like, oh, maybe I'm more courageous than I thought, which is a good thing, right? That's what this book is all about. It's about introspection. Maybe I'm more courageous than I thought in those situations, but also what ways can I improve? What ways have I lacked courage? And man, you know, that really spoke to me when he talked about, you know, courage. You know, and like I said, he kind of closes that chapter with my definition of courage also requires meeting the issue head on, like not fading, not doing anything, you know, really, really, just really having the courage to do the right thing. And he even talks about having the courage to walk away, right? Have courage to walk away when you know you're in a loser. He talks about, back to the book, I've learned that courage need not be loud. It is often quiet. It does not require witnesses for any type of validation. Many heroic acts and courageous decisions are commitments, and commitments are made in solitude. And real courage, the genuine article, needs no publicity. It always speaks for itself. Pick battles big enough to matter and small enough to win. As a leader, you can't be revving up your personal war machine every time something doesn't go your way. Over the long run, the odds are against you. You just can't win every single time. Some issues, some battles simply aren't worth your effort. So save your energy for the truly meaningful battles. And you know there will be more than enough of them. And that's what he's talking about. Have the courage to walk away. Have the courage to recognize a loser. Have the courage to just deal with it. You don't want to charge a hill under heavy fire. You don't want to do that. I understand, back to the book, understand the concept that people can both display what is referred by the experts as smart courage or stupid courage. And I agree that smart courage is always infused and bolstered with the intelligence, self-discipline, focus, and morals. It's pretty easy to see smart courage in action. I also accept that stupid courage needs only audacity, and that is too usually easy to recognize. But here's the kicker, and this spoke to me as well, because I'm in it. I'm 100% behind him on this. Back to the book. I must tell you that on many occasions I have witnessed a person exhibiting stupid courage, and I usually respected it. And sometimes I loved it. To witness another human being acting in a bold, daring, fearless, to hell with it manner can occasionally leave you pretty impressed, affected, and even breathless. Not being able to walk in the shoes of these intrepid persons at their critical moment of decision, I have now grown reluctant to judge them, especially in any negative light. How can I know all that was in their mind or their heart when they charged that hill? Maybe the leadership book theorists need a better word than stupid. Maybe it's only stupid to them. Maybe we have become a little slower to criticize. Maybe we have to become a little slower to criticize when someone's concept of courage doesn't match ours. So I thought that was pretty cool too, because I have definitely been in those shoes, right? Like when someone's going off at the man, right? And sometimes there's a time and a place for that, right? There's a time and a place for that. And I've been like right behind that guy, like a hype man. And I've done it myself, and it makes you feel good. But then sometimes afterward, once you've calmed down and you're no longer emotional, and that's really what that stupid courage is. It's more emotionally driven than intellectually driven, right? And afterward, you usually don't feel very good. You're like, oh crap, I kind of screwed up. Like when your adrenaline's not pumping. But it can be a beautiful thing to witness, right? Like, and we like that. We like people that stand up and pound the pulpit, right? That's why there's so much of a fire service extremism going on these days, right? Like these cult people that are out there, trust me, they're out there. They're trying to build their own little cult of the fire service. Not a culture, a cult in the fire service. And they're trying to get you to side with them. And anyone that doesn't believe what they do is they're cowards and they're not good firemen or anything like that, right? That stuff is out there. And it's easy to get wrapped up in it, man. I've gotten wrapped up in it. Anybody that's ever been to FDIC and listened to Bobby Halton talk, one time he was talking about Themistocles and the 300, and I was ready to go start a war for him. That's how powerful of a speaker he was, right? That's how much of a, how charismatic he can be. But man, that wasn't, I mean, like, that wasn't courageous of me to, like, go behind him, right? Right? And it really wasn't him even being courageous, right? He has a stand. He has an audience, you know? He's got a platform. He's got an agenda, right? That true courage, man, it really comes from just having the courage to know when and when not to do things and being steadfast in that. And I really, that whole chapter really, really spoke to me. Chapter 11, skipping ahead a little bit to chapter 11, because again, I don't want to read you the entire book, but I'm reading you some pieces that really speak to me. And I'm reading you some pieces and parts, and I know it's getting a little long. It's longer than I like to do a podcast, but I really just feel like this book is awesome. And we're gonna talk about a couple other things, but man, go buy this book. I mean, I want you to buy this book, and that's why I'm trying to highlight everything that has spoken to me in this book, and I hope it speaks to you the same way. Go buy the book on Amazon. I'm telling you, like, you will not be disappointed. Chapter 11, on page 146, talking about compassion. Like it or not, ready or not, leaders are frequently present in other people's darkest hours. In an instant, leaders can often become our brother's keeper. Insincere lip service won't get the job done. Sometimes words alone fall short. Frequently, compassion for others is about doing something. Speaking of doing something, I would suggest that as a leader, you not be too slow in wiping a person's slate clean. Heaven knows some of us have benefited from someone who really cared, someone who took a risk on us, someone who gave us a second chance. Don't lose sight of how many times you have benefited from forgiveness or a slate wiped clean. It must work both ways. Being the leader does not entitle you to have selective memory function. If somebody is in your personal doghouse, make sure that you put him or her there and you really believe that he or she has earned that distinction. Don't fill up your doghouse by automatically buying into other people's water cooler rumor mill stories. When you are making character assessment of someone, find out for yourself. It's too important a decision to leave to others. The larger your capacity for true leadership is, the smaller your doghouse will need to be. One of the heaviest things in life to carry around every single day is a grudge, and it's even heavier if you're in a position of leadership. Man, that I can tell you, this is something that I have struggled with my entire career, is not only being compassionate for others, but holding grudges and like just not understand, and some of it was immaturity, and some of it is just luck, man. Like I've had down periods in my life, right? Like I've gone through hardship. I mean, it's no secret. I've talked about it on the podcast before. My oldest son was born with a birth defect. He's fine. We got it fixed. He's awesome. He's a, hopefully, he's a wrestler. You know what I mean? Like he's hoping to go to college and wrestle. He's being recruited by colleges. You know what I mean? But like they said when he was born, he might not walk normal. He may never run. He may never be able to play sports. He may never be able to do, he might be short. I mean, hell, the kid's 6'2". But in with my and my wife also is a cancer survivor, right? So I've had hardships, right? But I've still always, I'm just lucky that I've got such a great support system, and I've had such a great support system in my life that those massive bumps in the road, we dealt with them relatively easy. There was really no, there was no problems. Like my mom and dad stepped up to help, and my aunts and uncles and my brothers and sisters and just people in the firehouse, right? Like the support system I had was just immense, and so the burdens didn't feel as heavy, right? And then I've done that stuff for other people too, right? Try to take some of the burden off of them and try to help them and try to do things for them, and I've just been lucky. But not everyone has that, or not everyone's willing, not everyone has the courage to accept those help, that help. Not everyone has the courage to accept those things from you. So I have struggled with that, and especially one of it made me conceited, right? For a long time, I was like, well, I never missed a day of work while my wife was dealing with cancer and was pregnant with our second son. Why do you have to miss a day of work? I didn't call in sick for 4 years straight, and I was dealing with all of this stuff. You can't do what I can do? What are you, weak? And man, what an asshole I was. What a complete and utter asshole, right? Like, not compassionate, not empathetic, not even sympathetic, not anything, right? And what a jerk, right? Like, that wasn't the way to be. That's not the way to treat people. That's not the way to do anything. That doesn't mirror leadership. And for a long time, I thought leadership on the fire ground was the most important thing. And I still feel like it's very important. But man, leadership in that firehouse, that is where you're gaining that leadership credibility. People won't follow you on the fire ground if they know that you don't care about them in the firehouse. They just won't. They won't. They won't do it. They won't take the risk for you, right? And more importantly, they won't take the risk for them. So I've often struggled with compassion, and when people have wronged me, holding a grudge, and I talked about earlier where there's people I don't trust anymore, but and I haven't forgiven them either. But this book has given me a new perspective on forgiveness, and man, it totally has changed my outlook. And man, I'm going to start forgiving people. And back to the book here. Most leaders should and do have more important things to worry about than old or emerging grudges. Initially, I misunderstood forgiveness. I thought it mandated a total reconciliation and rebuilding toward the previous relationship status. And in many situations, I wasn't up to that. But that doesn't need to be the case. Achieving those plateaus are often impossible. To forgive simply means to stop feeling anger and resentment. So forgiveness becomes not just about the one who harmed me, but forgiveness can also be about me. And selfishly, for me, I have learned that when I forgive someone, I'm actually giving myself a gift of freedom from pain and anger and carrying around the grudge. Embarrassingly, I've learned from personal experience that maintaining your grudges is not a freebie. If you're going to actively work your grudge as a leader, it will cost you. You'll pay the heavy price of giving up your time, your energy, and tons of your emotion. I mean, that has changed my perspective immensely on what forgiveness truly means. I believed exactly what Chief Appleby is talking about, that if you forgave someone, you had to go back to the way it was. Like, if we were friends before, now we're friends again. Well, it doesn't have to. And that was hard for me, so I didn't forgive a lot of people, right? Like, I didn't forgive a lot of people. Like, that's why I'm still holding a grudge on some people that I felt have mistreated me. And man, that takes a ton of energy, that takes a ton of time. Because like, if you're working that grudge, like, it's on all the time. Like, the grudge doesn't quit just because you're not at the firehouse, right? The grudge quits if you, the grudge is still there if you see him out. Like, I mean, and legit, like who's done this? And you know you have. If you haven't, you're probably lying to yourself. Who has seen someone that you don't like, that you're holding a grudge against, that you're pissed off at the grocery store, Walmart, at a concert? What do you end up doing? You all know it. You're getting ready to laugh. You're getting ready to laugh. If you are like pushing the grocery cart and you hit that aisle and you see that person you don't like, what do? You probably turn the cart around and go down the opposite aisle. Man, how much energy does that take? You hate that guy so bad you can't pass him in the grocery store. And I've done it, man. I have done it. I have seen people who I have no interest in speaking to, and I've like, oop, nope, not going that way. And I haven't perfected it. I still do it sometimes, right? But I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to learn it again. That's what this is all about, is an introspection. It is really, really, really an introspection on what you, and like, and I laughed when I read that, because I'm like, man, you're right. I'm working that grudge all the time. I hate that guy all the time. He's taking up a lot of my time, a lot of my energy, a lot of my emotions. That's a heavy burden I'm carrying around. So I don't have to like the guy. But I need to forgive, and I need to move on, and I need to let it go. And, you know, what do they say? Be like Elsa in Frozen. Just let it go. I need to do that, and I'm working on it. I'm not perfect. God bless, I'm not perfect. But man, I've carried around a lot of baggage for way too long, and I'm sure most of you have too. So it's not worth it. It's not worth it. I'm telling you, it's not worth it. So forgive, and forgiveness doesn't mean going back to the previous relationship. Forgiveness is that reconciliation, that just letting it go, not being angry anymore, like not holding on to that grudge. So we've talked about a lot of the leadership values, and we're going to end on humility, which is chapter 13. It's not the last value that Chief Appleby talks about, but it's super important, and this is probably the part of the book that hit me the most and really caused me to be very introspective of myself when I was reading it, when I was, you know, going through it, so much so that like I screenshotted a couple of pages of the book and sent it to my friends, and I was like, holy shit, this is me, this is how I feel, this may be the mistake I'm making. And chapter 13, it starts on page 179 in the book, and it's about humility. Displaying humility is not a sign of weakness. In fact, The Economist in 2013 has called humility the secret sauce in outstanding leadership. The difficulty in attempting to be humble, to be a humble person, is that inside all of us, leaders and followers alike, resides an incredibly powerful force, our ego. Our ego has both wonderful, positive potential, and if it gets out of control, disastrous, negative potential. Man, I've read a book called Ego is the Enemy, and that's 100% accurate. The freaking ego, man, it can get you. And I know a lot of the times I get angry is because people push up against my ego, right? They push up against my, I got angry yesterday because someone pushed up against my ego. Thankfully, I was smart enough to calm down and approach and ask my question from a calm place, right? But man, I was fired up because my ego got bruised. My ego got bruised yesterday, right? It happens. Because everyone, even our greatest leaders, are all human and imperfect. Many of us struggle with this internal force that's continually attempting to bring us harm. Ego-induced damage can emerge in at least two different ways. In the first harmful scenario, our ego causes us to constantly criticize, lash out, and tear other people down. Sound familiar to anybody? In the second, equally negative scenario, our ego is constantly striving to make us look more special, more gifted, and better than we truly are. Again, does that sound familiar to anybody? I know it sounds, and so this chapter can kind of bruise your ego a little bit, because it's kind of talking about your shortcomings. You know, it talks about being humble in this chapter, and it gives several examples. You know, and it's just really like it's a humbling. It is truly a humbling article. And it talks about, like, when you're getting that stuff happening to you, that, you know, you sometimes you pull away, you disconnect from the department. And when that happens, we all lose, right? You lose a leadership opportunity, the organization loses, people lose your leadership. And that's happened to me. I've disconnected from a lot of things because I've been pissed off at some of the leadership stuff and everything. And that's not good, right? Because I'm trying to be, you know, not bragging or anything like that. But there are things that I am good at, and there are things that maybe I'm the best at. And if I withdraw from the organization, people aren't getting the benefit of that, right? And I have to be able to show the humility to realize that I have to be part of something bigger than myself, right? It's not always about me and what I want, and I have to sometimes take positions, which has been very difficult for me. I have to sometimes take positions that I wouldn't want in order to benefit the big picture, and that's tough for me. It's very tough for me. It's extremely tough for me. You know. So this leads to a story, and and this one really, like, this is the story that I highlighted, and I screenshotted and sent it to my friends. And I'm not going to read you the whole story, but I'm going to read you a good part of it, because, man, I've kind of been here, and I feel this way a lot, right? I feel this way a lot. And I feel this way often, and it's I'm not saying I'm gonna be perfect at it, right? But I have lived this story, and it has damaged my leadership. It has damaged my standing within the organization a couple times, and it, like, this story smacked me in the face. So I'll just, instead of belaboring, this story is, it starts on page 185. It's called Too Big for My Britches. I recall the morning I received a call from Car2's secretary while I was commanding Engine 24. She instructed me to report to Deputy Commissioner Kite's office in headquarters the next day at 10 a.m. in full dress uniform, and didn't provide any reason for the order. I was alarmed and confused. To my knowledge, everything had been going great at 24's. I called my battalion chief and asked if he could shed any light on the order. He knew nothing. Later that afternoon, I called a friend who was assigned to the department's research and planning unit. I persuaded him to tell me off the record that the department was only about a month away from opening its newly constructed second fire station at the Philadelphia International Airport. I had been selected to be the first commanding officer of the brand new crash crew station, Engine 78. This was horrible news for me. I didn't want to go anywhere. I loved 24s. The station and all the guys. I was so upset. The next morning, Harry Kite, the elderly, well-respected deputy commissioner, beckoned me into his office and motioned for me to sit in front of him. He opened with a few nice remarks about my performance at 24s and then told me they were transferring me to Engine 78 effective 8 a.m. Monday morning. So, Cap, what do you think? He asked with a broad smile on his weathered face. I think it stinks, Commissioner. Feel like I'm being punished for doing a good job at 24s. I don't want to go down there and work with those guys. Most of them are just looking to get out of fire duty, coasting through their careers or counting their days until pension. I prefer to stay right where I am. You just said that I'm doing a good job, Besides, for me, this job is all about fire duty. Immediately, that broad smile vanished from his face. Are you serious? He asked. Absolutely. I don't want to go there. I'm a firefighter, Commissioner. I want to serve in the busiest stations in the worst neighborhoods for as long as I can. Now he sat more erect behind the large oak desk. Do you know what I wish, Cap? I wish all those people who recommended you for this assignment were here to witness this. Trust me, I had other captains in mind, but people kept telling me that you were the best person for this job. I think they would all be shocked to hear your reaction. I'm sorry, Commissioner, I just don't want to go there. I think that I can be much more valuable to the department by staying at 24's. Listen to yourself. Do you ever utter any sentences that don't have the words I or me in it? Commissioner, I understand you're disappointed. If you have to transfer me to the officer pool, at least I'll still be involved in active firefighting. With the sternest of tones, he let me have it. Oh, I'm going to transfer you all right, but it won't be to the pool. Don't you understand what's happening here? The department has selected you for a once-in-a-lifetime assignment. It's an incredible opportunity for you. There's never been an Engine 78. You'll be on the ground floor creating and building a vital unit that is desperately needed to ensure regional public safety. Are you afraid of the challenge? I didn't say anything. You know, ever since you sat down, all I've heard is your wants, your wishes. This isn't about you. It's about you being part of our team. To me, you just look like a selfish kid with an enormous ego who cares nothing about the needs of the organization. You really have an inflated opinion of your own value to the department. Oh, you're fine when things are going your way. Full tour of duty at 68s, a first command assignment at 24s, but the minute the organization needs a commitment from you, you selfishly run away. I felt a crushing embarrassment. He was right. He paused for a deep breath and continued in on me hard. I think this whole firefighting service requirement of yours is total bullshit. I read your file. A year at 60s, then the latter 24 to 16s, and 3 years at 68s, now the captain of 24s. Do you understand they are seeing the same type of fires over and over again? They're just different sections of the city. Don't you have the strategies and tactics down by now? Do you think that you're still learning and growing every day as much as you could or should? With 78s, I'm offering you something so different, so special, and so unique, and you can't or won't think about anybody other than yourself. I personally don't know what all these people see in you. Those last comments hurt me deeply. It was now clear that I was letting down more people than Commissioner Kite. It felt like he'd stuck a dagger in my heart and slowly twisted it in all directions while he looked me in the eyes. Then it got worse. He got visibly angry and raised his voice. So let me be real here, clear here, Captain. I'm positively transferring you to Engine 78. What are we talking about here? All this crap you're handing me today. This is now about whether you're going to the airport as a demoted platoon lieutenant or the commanding officer. You got me? Commissioner Kite didn't let up. It's your choice how you want to walk through the front door of 78s when it opens. Take tonight and think about it long and hard, because this is a career-defining moment for you. Call me at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning and tell me your decision. Do you want to report in as the captain or just a platoon lieutenant? Now get out of my sight. So that right there really, really grabbed me. Because I have been and am still a lot like what Chief Appleby's was talking about in there. I didn't join the fire department to do a lot of those administrative things, or I joined the fire department to be a fireman, right? And I've benefited kind of greatly from that. I've been promoted twice, and I've had really good assignments, and but admittedly, a lot of times when the organization has asked me to do things that I didn't want to do, I've said no. And no one's ever come and hit me hard like that. But I wonder, as I sit here and as I read that story and I ponder, is that what the organization thinks of me? And it really came to fruition when I started hearing rumors that the administrative chiefs in the department said that I wasn't a team player. I keep hearing that I'm not a team player, which made me very angry. made me very angry because I feel like I've done a lot. I've done committees. I've never done any administrative work in the department as far as like being assigned to an administrative position. However, like I've done budgets and I've been a station captain that was in charge of specialty shops where budgeting and administrative work was a big part of it. I didn't want to go learn about Zoll monitors or do the budgets for the Zoll monitor or the tire chain shop, but I did. And I thought I did a good job and I thought that was good enough. But I've had opportunities to go into administrative roles, and I've basically told them I wasn't interested, that I wanted to be in the field, and I wanted to be a firefighter, and that's where I guess some of this not a team player stuff came out. And I got angry, and I confronted one of those administrative chiefs, respectfully, of course, and was like, I don't want to hear that. Like, I am a team player. I'm doing my part for the team. And he listened, but, you know, when you look back on it and you reflect on it, like, was he just kind of placating to me? Was he just like listening to me so that I felt heard? And is that what the administration thinks of me? And I think they do. So it puts me at kind of a career defining crossroads, right? Like, do I stay where I'm at and just continue to muddle through my career for the next 11 years? Or do I take a challenge that I don't really want, but maybe it'll benefit not only me, but the organization? And that's really what it's all about. And, you know, I hate the word organization. We're a fire department, but, you know, I'm using the term organization because just that's what was used in the book. It's a very, very tough, it's tough to hear. And that's not the end of the story. That's not even far from the end of the story. But it's pretty rough. And that really, I even made my wife read that. Right, like I finished it. I was like, you got to read this. And 'cause she could even tell it was affecting me. And it is, it still is. As I read it again, like I'm like, man, is this what my impact in the fire department is? Like, am I just the guy? Like, yep, they need me to come put out fires, and they depend on me for that kind of stuff, and I train a lot, but I'm not a team player. And that's tough to swallow, right? Like, that's tough, you know. That's tough to be humble in that situation. And so it's tough, man. And so I don't want to spoil the rest of the story, but also that stuff kind of damages your credibility and damages your leadership role. And I mean, it talks about again, to summarize the end of that story, basically the guy meets a new firefighter that he's never met before that's coming to that station, and the firefighter the whole time is talking about how he knows that the new captain doesn't want to be there. That's the rumor on the street, that the new captain doesn't want to be there because of that grandstanding that he did with the commissioner. So, yeah, I mean, that's crazy, isn't it? An extremely powerful book. An extremely powerful book, and extremely... just a truly introspective book that I think everyone should read, and you should go through the questions at the end of each chapter, and you should really give this book a go. And this is a super, super long podcast. This is probably, I think, the longest one I've ever done, but I truly feel that going through this book, and not even the whole thing, but going through the parts that I did, are valuable, and they matter. So, with that being said, go pick it up. Again, Leadership Values and Introspection by Gary F. Appleby. Thank you wholeheartedly to Bobby Eckert, who freaking recommended that book and was humble enough and had the courage enough to accept an apology from someone he's never met that had already prejudged him. So thanks for that. I hope this book speaks to you the way it did for me. And I'm not perfect. I don't know if I'll change 1,000% because I've read it, but man, it really speaks to me, and I thought it was valuable, and I think this should be required reading before you ever decide to sit for the promotional test. Don't read the promotional test books. Read this book first and see if you really have what it takes to be a leader and to see if you're falling short in one of the values that are important to leadership and how you can fix it. With that being said, I couldn't do what I do without just the support of some great, great people and companies. The first, Taylor's Tens. Taylor's Tens makes helmet fronts for fire helmets. They don't just make helmet fronts. They make everything that if it can be made out of tin, that guy makes it. Go to taylorstens.com. That's taylorstens.com. And he's going to give you a lot of ideas, and you're going to send him some ideas, and he's going to send you some custom art. It's not like a click down menu, fly by night type thing. He's making awesome stuff for everybody. Go to taylorstens.com. Stop wearing leathers. Start wearing Taylor's Tens. Second, Vanguard Safety Wear. Vanguard Safety Wear, the makers of the MK1 Fire Glove, and now they have the MK1 Ultra. They've got the Squad 1. They've got the irregular MK1. They make awesome fire gloves. I wear MK1 Ultras every day. Every day. I wore the MK1s before. They're awesome. They're the best fire gloves on the market. So many people have gone and gotten a pair of those gloves, and they're just awesome. They're awesome. They're awesome. They're awesome. I can't say enough about them. So make sure you go to VanguardSafetyWear.com or DingusFire.com and get you a pair of MK1 Ultras, MK1 Fire Gloves, or the Squad ones. Vanguard Safety Wear, made for work. IDLH Technology, and man, they make the absolute best command board on the market. I use it every day. I even have their mini command board that I wear in my coat in case I'm remote from the buggy and have to keep track of people. I paired mine with a steering wheel desk, and it just is awesome. I like to do command from inside the car, and the board, it has a flip chart. You can modify it to what you need. IDLH Technology, it is an awesome, awesome, awesome command board. Pick yourself one up today. IDLHtechnology.com. And lastly, the Fireground Commander Conference, coming back Monday, May 23rd, Tuesday, May 24th, Wednesday, May 25th, 2022, the beautiful Henrico Theater in Henrico County, Virginia. And man, what a lineup we have got for you. If you've listened to this podcast before, you follow me on social media, you know I'm heavily involved with the Fireground Commander Conference, founded by my good friend Ben Martin, who speaks on intoxicated leadership and runs the fire service blog and Facebook page Embrace the Resistance. He came up with this concept, and he brought a lot of us on board, and I'm just so humbled to get to help plan this conference and help run this conference every year. Monday, May 23rd through Wednesday, May 25th, 2022, Henrico Theater, Henrico County, Virginia. Check out this lineup. Monday, May 23rd, Frank Viscuso, Jason Patton from Fire Department Chronicles, and Dina Ali. Frank's going to be talking about leadership. That's what Frank does. Frank's going to be coming and smacking you right in the face first thing, 8 in the morning, with some leadership stuff. Jason Patton and Dina are going to be talking about mental health because, you know, and that may not be a sexy thing to a lot of people, but man, I'm telling you, I'm tired of hearing about our brothers and sisters committing suicide. And Jason Patton and Dina Ali are going to come in and talk about some of those things. After that, after the Monday, our annual Bullshitting Over Beers social at PBR Hanover, over off of Chamberlain Road in Hanover County. Man, they make great pizzas. We're going to be raising money for the Central Virginia Burn Camp. We're going to be doing all sorts of stuff at that social. Some of the speakers will be there. Hopefully firefighters, our union is involved, Local 1568. Hopefully other unions are going to come get involved. It was one of the best socials we've ever had. I'm so glad we're getting to do it again at the same venue. It's an awesome venue. It's going to be an awesome time. I can't wait for that. Coming right back Tuesday, May 24th, with Jonah Smith and Jonathan Brumley talking about engine company stuff, and then ending that day with Bill Gustin. If you don't know who Bill Gustin is, you need to wake up, get a clue, go buy one, whatever you need to do. Go to Walmart and buy you a clue. I'm sure they sell them there. They're underneath the rolled back prices. All right. Bill Gustin, one of the godfathers of engine company operation, 40-some years in the Miami-Dade Fire Department. He's going to be talking about all sorts of things engine company as well, and it's a perfect way to end that Tuesday. And then we come back Wednesday morning with more Bill Gustin, Bill Gustin Part 2. We're giving him pretty much 8 hours to talk, and he's just going to kill it. I know he's going to kill it. I've listened to Bill Gustin talk in the past, and anything that the guy talks about engine company-wise, you just better shut up and listen. And then lastly, we're going to end that day with Basil Ibrahim, and he's going to be talking about our rapid intervention stuff. So some awesome, awesome stuff. We were supposed to have James Johnson come talk about building construction. I hope he's still going to be able to make it, but right now with COVID and stuff in Canada, it's still tough. So hopefully James Johnson will be a surprise for us, or maybe he can zoom in like Ryan Pennington did. But man, hopefully he'll be able to make that happen. But you know, he may or may not be able to make the conference. But still, all those speakers, Frank Viscuso, Jason Patton, Dina Ali, Jonah Smith, Jonathan Brumley, Bill Gustin, James Johnson, Basil Ibrahim, all those speakers for $175, including lunch provided all 3 days, and one of the best snack rooms you're ever going to see, staffed by the Metro Richmond Flying Squad. We've got drinks, we've got candy, we've got snacks, we've got all sorts of stuff. We've got coffee, we've got tea, lemonade, everything that you can imagine we're going to have. Bottles of water, soda, whatever. All 3 days provided to you as part of your conference registration fee. The bullshitting over beers social, that's part of coming to the conference as well, but you don't need to come to the conference just to come. All of that. Beautiful venue, great speakers, one of the best atmospheres you're ever going to find in the fire service at a fire service conference for $175. I'm telling you, you can't beat that. It's the best value in the country. I dare you to find a conference that gives you as much as we do and for that value. You're not going to find it. You know why you're not going to find it? Because we go to a lot of them as well, and we know what this stuff costs, and we know what people are paying to go listen to a lineup like this. So do yourself a favor. Go to embracetheresistance.com. Click on the menu button, and when you see that FGC conference, smash that, get registered. You don't want to be the only guy on May 26th, you don't want to be the guy in your fire department that said they missed it. I can guarantee you. This is going to be one of our best ones yet, and we're already working on the lineup for 2023. And if you think this lineup is good, you just wait to see what we've got planned for 2023. It may be, last year we did 10 speakers in 2021. We may go 10 to 12 on this one. I mean, so you don't want to miss it. You don't want to miss this one. And guess what? You don't get access to the early bird if you ain't at the conference. A lot of times we offer only a certain early birds, and we don't announce it till the very last day. We don't announce it to the very last lecture, the very last day, and those guys get a head start on everyone. So if you want cheaper, if you want the conference at a cheaper rate, you got to be there. You got to sign up. You got to register. So don't delay. EmbraceTheResistance.com, Fireground Commander Conference. Get registered. $175. Best value in the country for all those speakers. Lunch provided every day. A social at one of the best venues in the Richmond area. Fireground Commander Conference, May 23rd through the 25th. Henrico County, Virginia at the Henrico Theater. And that's about all I've got. I know this has been a super long one. Thanks for everyone for sticking with me for this long episode. You know what we do. Make sure you're spending 1 hour a day in the library learning something about our job. Reading something. Watching a YouTube video. Reading leadership values. Make sure you're spending 1 hour a day in the gym working on your physical fitness. Getting in shape to do the job that we signed up to do. And make sure you're spending 1 hour a day doing some sort of hands-on training, putting your hands on the tools and equipment we need to do our job. Because at the end of the day, this is still a blue-collar, hands-on job. You do that, you become a pretty phenomenal firefighter. I guarantee it. Thanks for listening. Stay aggressive, but stay safe. I'm out.